That is not Dave Champion.
Dave was so totally unprepared this week that he didn't even show up. So I'm here in his place.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Bill Carnes. This is my guest co-host, Pat Kirby, and together we are
totally unprepared.
So
we did that even though we were totally
yes,
unprepared.
Yes, and we didn't practice it.
I know.
So, well done. See, that's why the name of this show works so well.
Yes.
Because you can never expect us to be prepared. And if we are, you should be surprised.
Right.
We hold the bar very low.
This is the most prepared that the show's ever been because I actually have notes.
This is more notes than I've ever brought to the show.
Which I'll never read. So there you go.
So, Pat, Tuesday of this week was basically Super Tuesday 2.0. A couple of things came out and weren't really too big surprises. Rubio finished second in Florida, not first, to another guy who has a lot of financial interest there in his own home, Donald Trump. And then, of course, you had John Kasich, who won Ohio, which is not unexpected.
Right.
But that was a winner-take-all.
Well, it is kind of unexpected because a lot of times you'll have governors that people don't like that much, but apparently they like him okay there in Ohio.
And it's interesting you say that because a guy that I know, a friend of mine, that I was actually on Top Shot season one with, Chris Serino, lives in Ohio, and I called him up a few weeks back because the Kasich campaign was courting me to give an official endorsement prior to the Nevada caucus.
Right.
So I did a little bit of research on him, not the least of which was calling Chris, and I said, how do you like this guy? He says, he's not our kind of guy. He's not all that conservative. And I said, well, when you looked at he voted in favor of the 1994 assault weapons ban, as they called
it. Right, and NAFTA and all kinds of things.
He's had some really crappy votes. Yeah. So I told his campaign manager here locally, a guy that you and I know, who is from Ohio but was actually out here for many years, went back to Ohio, came back for this campaign. I told him I just can't do that. There's too many things that I stand for. I cannot endorse this guy. Now, he should be great. He has legislative experience in the House. And he has executive experience as a governor, but he's got bad decisions.
Yeah, well, it's the one thing going for him, I think, is his the fiscal policies. You know, he's balanced budgets before and things like that. But it is definitely these days, conservatives or anyone who believes in liberty and the Constitution is grading on the curve on with these Republican candidates, and the curve is pretty low.
Unfortunately, yeah, there's not much of a curve anymore, anyhow. But Rubio bowed out of the race. He suspended his campaign.
Thank goodness. The fact that Rubio lasted longer than Rand Paul is, to me, a very poor indicator of the intellect or the education of the Republican voter these days.
I would agree. And, I mean, Rand Paul, he finished fifth in Ohio in the first contest. But he bowed out. Not necessarily that he had to because of the race, but I understand that the mayor of Lexington, Kentucky, I think it was, or Louisville, one of the L's, Kentucky, decided to run against him to primary him for his Senate race, which he was hedging his bets. I mean, he needs to stay somewhere.
Yeah.
So he had to go back and then start running a Senate campaign.
Right. You know, he's kind of, I'm guessing, just weighed the benefits of continuing on the present campaign where, you know, he can still fight for liberty in the Senate and do a lot of things. He just had a vote about not selling F-16s to Pakistan last week. So he continues. If you pay attention to what he's doing in the Senate, it's still, you know, trying to up the bar a little bit.
Unfortunately, we lost that vote. So it's likely F-16s are going to be going to Pakistan. Now, something a number of people may remember if you've been around long enough. I was a kid at the time. You were pretty young at the time. Was in the late 70s, the U.S. decided to sell a small squadron of F-14 Tomcats to Iran. This is about 2 years before the Ayatollah takeover and the Shah was ousted and all that good stuff. We sold them to the Shah. And that came with all of the backup and everything that people need. Because for every 1 hour of flight time that these fighter jets have, they have between 20 and 30 hours of man hours of maintenance. Now, you might have 20 or 30 guys getting it done in 1 hour, but 20 or 30 hours of man hours of maintenance for 1 hour flight time is on average. And F-14s were absolutely not an exception to that rule. So General Electric, who designed and built the plane, they were there. Mm-hmm. And before the General Electric guys left, they took the fire control chips out of the boards so that they couldn't actually fire on those things just before they left the country. Mm. So these guys have virtually new 40-year-old F-14 sitting there, which when the F-14 Tomcat got taken out of service for the U.S. Navy, it's almost been 10 years now, almost 10 years, when they got taken out and mothballed and disassembled, every bit of those planes is considered top secret and strategic because of that mystery group in Iran. Right. Some people say, oh, yeah, they're still flying them. I don't think it's possible. They don't. There's no backup. There's no spare parts, you know.
Right.
So who knows what we'll end up with in Pakistan with this one. You know, it's, again, they say the enemy of my friend is my enemy, but that has been shown so many times throughout history to not be the case.
Yeah, it's this whole mess in the Middle East where, you know, I think that our guys are over there, they're fighting against weapons that we gave them. You know?
More common than not.
Yeah, and that's the big problem. I just wish someone would follow the money, you know, the... When you follow the money, you find out who's supplying weapons, who's paying them to have gas for their trucks and everything like that. That is a real eye-opener to, that people should know. There should be that transparency in government so that you follow the money.
I think my adage was wrong. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. I think I said it silly. Anyhow, along that line of the money and where things are going... You actually just recently on social media posted a video that was just a portion of a bigger documentary that was pointing out a lot of American industrialization that was financially and physically supporting the Nazi regime even during the active portions of World War II,
right.
Leading up to and including the wartime, not the least of which a lot of their vehicles were powered by Ford engines on Ford drivetrains.
Yeah. They invaded France. Stuff. They invaded France with Ford trucks, you know. So, and that's the same thing you see today with ISIS. You know, you see all these pictures of them driving all these brand new Toyota pickups and brand new Humvees. You know, like where did that stuff come from?
Yeah, and they're shooting a lot of guns that were shuttled to them from Libya when we unconstitutionally, illegally, war crime, whatever you can say, bombed and got rid of Gaddafi because Gaddafi was not our puppet.
Right.
And that went from the highest standard of living in Libya in the entire Middle East to what is essentially South Central now. It is just it's warlord after warlord and dive depressed area the way that Mogadishu was up until just a few years ago.
Yeah, I remember hearing a quote from someone from an Iranian that was talking about Saddam Hussein going, he was not a nice guy and people would disappear every couple of weeks and stuff like that, but at least we had electricity and running water.
Yeah.
So, but we brought him democracy.
Yeah, we did. And what has that brought the rest of us?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's unstable. Now, not to condone what Hussein ever was and how he did things, or most of those, Assad in Syria.
Right.
But, Rand Paul had it right. Every time we get involved and topple one dictator, it's followed by far worse things.
Sure.
Far worse atrocities.
Yeah.
So it literally is a lesser of two evils.
Right.
And history has shown us whoever's in place, leave them there.
Yeah.
Let them deal with it. It's not our country.
Right. You know, it was the Washington that said, talk and trade with all nations, but favoritism to none. And that's really wise advice. You know, America is supposed to be the shining example of the world on what liberty can do, and you can't spread liberty by toppling regimes and things like that. We just, look like to the rest of the world like we're another invader.
Yeah, and we support the puppets that support. I mean, look at Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Probably one of the top three worst human rights violating countries on the planet.
I can't stand that. Yeah, that we're... we see our presidents bowing to these guys. You know, it's all about the money.
It is. You follow the money and the power. And until we are able to get money out of politics, we'll always have this. But because there's so much money out there available to completely eradicate it from politics.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm afraid of the idea of an Article 5 Constitution of States because It's not just going to be a bunch of liberty-minded conservatives in there doing this.
Yeah.
There's going to be a tremendous amount of Bernie Sanders-type supporters that are involved in this as well. We're not going to get everything. I mean, if we could do an Article 5 convention of states of just liberty-minded conservatives, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
But that's a pipe dream.
Come on. Who do I trust to mess with the Constitution? Maybe these two people sitting right here and totally unprepared, Dave Champion. But that list is really short. And then there's no guarantee that the people on that list would be involved in an Article 5 convention. More likely it would be Harry Reid and whatnot. And then it's, Mr. Chairman, I move that we suspend the rules and rewrite the Second Amendment. Yeah. All in favor, say aye.
Yeah, and what it is the people with the money that run politics now would certainly be behind who ends up in an Article 5 convention.
Yeah, yeah.
So
there's no kind of, in the Constitution, there's no description on who's going to be involved. We assume it's going to be our state legislature. Do you trust our state legislature?
Not ours, not the one in
Nevada. To go up and mess with the Constitution?
So what we end up with is if we wanted to have an Article 5 convention of states so that we could get the money out of politics, we know that the money still being in politics would pollute it, and that would never happen.
Right.
You know, we have seen this time and again, and it really came to hold in 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act.
Yeah.
I mean, now we've got debt-based currency. For those of you who don't know what debt-based currency is, Google the term debt-based currency. I actually was talking to a guy who's planning on running for Congress just this last week. I was telling you at lunch, who said that he had a plan to fix the economy. That in the first year, the federal government would have an influx of $25 trillion so they could pay down or pay off the debt. And then it would be $10 trillion after that with no income tax. So he wouldn't give me any details. I'm like, you realize $25 trillion is more than the gross national
product.
That's
printing presses running 24 hours a day. It's printing $1,000 bills.
I introduced him to the, do you know what the Grace Commission is? You know that we're paying only the interest on the debt. Nothing the Federal Reserve ever takes actually goes into the general fund. It all pays the interest on the debt, all goes to the Federal Reserve. We never pay the principal, always the interest. Just look up debt-based currency and you'll have an idea what we're talking about. That's where these guys are getting rich, all in the debt-based currency.
Right.
So, all right, that's going to bring segment one to a close. When we come back, Pat has his own What's Up With That coming right up. Here you go.
This is
now say hello, everybody.
Hello, everyone. Why'd you say go, go, go?
You were unprepared.
Then?
Well, no, you have to go off deck. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, I know. I was. Yeah. All right. Welcome back to Totally Unprepared, and I'm totally unprepared for the upcoming rant, as you can see.
Okay, go.
So you think I don't know how this works? Well, my rant has to do with what we were talking about before, the weak link in the American system. And that is that there are no principles in politics. Politics is all about the power. Now, our system of government was designed by the founders who it was all about principles. You know, politics, all politics should be based on principles. Political positions should be based on principles. But we don't do that today. We base everything on emotions. If something makes us feel good, we don't think of the long term and how the end results will be affected by our actions. Take a look at the current crop of presidential candidates. There's not any principles among any of them. They don't talk about the Constitution. They don't understand the Republic. They don't understand the principles of liberty. It's all about, I'm going to do favors for the right crowd, so I'm going to get elected. And that's the weak link. Bill was talking about getting the money out of politics. The ultimate fix for our political system is an informed electorate, an electorate that votes on principle and understands and cherishes the principles that our country was founded on. You can go back in history, and for 5,000 years of human evolution, we went from horse and buggy to slightly better horse and buggy, from wind-powered sailing ships to slightly better wind-powered sailing ships. And then freedom was introduced to the world, And less than 200 years later, we were walking on the moon. This is not an accident. This happened because if you had an idea pre-United States, if you didn't know the king, you couldn't do anything about it. You didn't have the resources. You didn't have the connections. You were basically a serf unless you were associated with a king. So there's a very small circle of people who had any influence on the world. And then once liberty came, the whole populace now, the intellectual pool just increased a thousandfold because everybody was free to follow their dreams, to follow their ideas. And that's what happened. That's the wonder of the United States, that the United States brought to the world was this freedom of ideas. And people don't cherish that enough these days. It's like, that is what made America great. You know, when you talk about making America great again, it was the freedom and the limited government that made us great. And Trump knows nothing about that. You know, he's just going to go and make deals, and liberty's going to go by the wayside. It's going to be a very interesting election. I'm interested to see what happens, just kind of because I see the Republican Party, who supposedly supported these principles in all of the, you know, the bylaws and the platform of the Republican Party, it all talks about these things, but they don't follow them. It's just a bunch of cronyism and supporting the rich military industrial complex and whatever else, and taking advantage of the taxpayers and to make themselves rich. But yeah, so it's going to be very interesting to see how this turns out. But getting principles back into politics, I don't know what the solution is.
You know, you and I are both very close with someone who, she's incredibly politically savvy. And she's been saying for the last couple of months now, since Scott Walker got out of the race, a month and a half or so, that she could see at a brokered convention Scott Walker being inserted. Now, we have to remember, Reince Priebus, who is the chair of the Republican National Committee, and really the RNC is his dog that he carries around on a leash.
Right, right.
He's the one that got Scott Walker elected.
Yeah.
Which is really what got him in that
position.
They're
good buddies. They both came from Wisconsin, I believe,
yes.
And stuff like that. So I could totally see that happening. And but, you know, it's like, I was at the convention in 2012, the national convention in Tampa, so I got to see firsthand the shenanigans that the party did to make sure Ron Paul could not be nominated, you know, and they didn't have to do it. He didn't have the support. Romney was going to win anyway. They didn't have to cheat. They could have just gone through the process and let everything happen, and people would have walked away going, okay, our voices were heard. But they cheated and they lied and they changed the rules to support them, and they alienated the whole delegation from Maine, which was a bunch of liberty loving, you know, people that
virtually kidnapped them.
Yeah,
put them on a bus, drove the bus around, and would not stop.
That was the bus from Virginia, which had Morton Blackwell in it, who was going to oppose the rules. So, but before that, they just said that the whole Maine delegation didn't count because they didn't like the way their state convention turned out. So it took away a state that Ron Paul had, which would have given him the 5-state plurality that was required. But then they changed the rules to 8-state majority anyway. And now that's going to come back and bite him in the butt, because now nobody's going to have an 8-state majority.
Other than Trump,
you know, well, I don't know, but maybe
Cruz might,
which will make it a brokered convention, which then, as you say, the RNC can, depending on the delegates who are there, can bring in Scott Walker or whatever else, you know, because right now they're only bound on the first vote, and they might even change that rule. So nobody's bound on the first vote. And the problem is, like with Ron Paul, all of us took the time to become delegates and go to the national convention. The Trump people aren't doing that. They showed up, we voted a majority, and then the people from the RNC machine are becoming the delegates. So the delegates are the ones who pick the nominee. So it's going to get down to the convention, and Trump's not going to have any support there. So yeah, all they got to do is change that rule, and he won't be the nominee.
You and I both remember 4 years ago, leading up to the convention here where we live in Nye County, Nevada, there was a lot going on. We ended up with, I think, 76 or 78 delegates to the state. Mm-hmm. We had a slate of people who were Ron Paul supporters. We wanted to get mm-hmm. up there. We all went. And now our convention's in a couple of days. It's this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And no slates are being put together. One guy that we know who was a Ron Paul guy that now is a Trump guy, I still don't quite get. He wants to put together an idea of a slate for some Trump-related people. But,
right.
Yeah, most of them are, they go to the caucus or they go to the primary, they mm-hmm. vote, and then they don't do anything else, which the power is at the convention, numbers at the convention.
Yes.
And it's one of these things that we touched on in the first segment of, and you hit it again this time, an informed electorate or, you know, populace,
yes.
the citizenry
yes.
that are registered to vote. That's an electorate. So if the electorate doesn't understand the process,
right.
How are you going to... Like, yes. One of the biggest complaints we had during the caucus on February 23rd, Nevada, here in Nye County, was go back to a primary. Because people don't understand a caucus. They
yes.
don't understand the power that
yes.
the individual voter has
right.
at a caucus if they choose to...
A caucus is
run.
A better form of representative government. Because it favors someone who can develop a following, you know, that people can be passionate about and stuff like that. A primary favors the media-controlled robots who, you know, are going to come out for 1 hour and vote and go home, where a caucus favors someone, you know, with a grassroots following. So it's a challenge to the status quo. You know, going back to that informed electorate, Thomas Jefferson said, educate the masses of the people, for surely then they will be the defenders of liberty. Well, we have certainly failed that, because no one knows anything about the principles of liberty and the benefits they've brought to the world. And, you know, I did a Max Justice quote, which was, freedom is the formula for the just advancement of humanity. Show some frickin' interest in it.
Yeah, so we talked once before, Dave and I did, about the Max Justice series, which you can see online. And Pat Kirby is the creator of Max Justice.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I've kind of reached my peak on what I think I can do in politics to inform, you know, to support liberty. So I decided to, along with my son, create a web series called Max Justice. You can find it at maxjustice.tv. To kind of educate with liberty principles and just principles of having virtue. And, you know, that's kind of what we're missing. De Tocqueville said, America will stop being great when America stops being good. Well, you can see from any Trump rallies and stuff, we've kind of stopped being good. And we need to get back to that. So
I'll get you there.
Yeah, so check out Max Justice and,
you know,
and more episodes to come.
You were talking about the education and Thomas Jefferson. When the federal government really grabbed a hold of education, that's when they start controlling the message that goes out there, which then becomes indoctrination.
Yeah.
We've seen this time and again throughout human history. When the government controls what you know, what you learn, what you're taught, and what you're supposed to respond,
yeah.
that is indoctrination.
Right.
And if you believe that the Department of Education is not indoctrination, then you haven't either, A, you haven't thought about it, or B, you're part of the problem, and you're part of that situation. You want to have Common Core and
right.
all these other fancy terms that have been thrown out there over the decades to get behind it lockstep.
Yeah.
And if you believe that it's not some form of indoctrination, then you have been indoctrinated.
Right. You know, and Jefferson probably never envisioned the indoctrination that would be happening. You know, the founders were extremely well educated about history and human nature, and that's where they blended their ideas and came up with our form of government. So that's what he was talking about, is educate the people on, you know, the marvel that liberty brought to the world, and then they'll want to defend it. But, you know, have millennials now buying into the whole socialism thing after, you know, how many times has that failed throughout history? And, you know, just no clue of what we're giving up.
Yeah, every country that's ever had socialism, and now what you got is you've got the everybody says, well, we can do it better than the last guys who failed 100 times. Mm-hmm. We knew better than the last guys who failed 101 times. Well, those guys that just failed, we can do it better than them. The idea of taking more from the producers to give to the masses who sit on their fat asses and do nothing takes the incentive out of the producers to do anything.
Right.
They're going to just up and leave. They're gone.
Yeah.
And they're going to take everything in. Yeah, Atlas Shrugged is no longer a fiction novel.
That's right.
So, all right, stick around. We'll be right back in segment three, and you'll hear my rant right after this. Okay, welcome back, and now it's time for my rant. You know what really grinds my gears? People who suck. Now, how many rants have I opened up with something along that line? Specifically, we're going to talk about politicians. Not necessarily elected officials. Generally, people think of a politician as someone who's been elected to office. Traditional definition. But politicians can come in all ways, shapes, forms, and sizes if they're directly involved in politics, such as if you have like a county manager or a town manager, a city manager. Well, they're a politician. They're involved in politics. They may have been hired or appointed by elected officials, but they're still a politician for all intents and purposes. So there's a good old quote. As a matter of fact, Pat Kirby just reminded me of it. Before you grant a power to government, you must first imagine that in the hands of your worst enemy. Well, imagine that. Now, we also love, I don't know how many of you may have been to Washington, D.C. You can walk around, see all the architecture, and there is a building in particular that has right on the side of it, and I'm going to paraphrase this, something along the idea of the authority to govern is granted, the power to government is granted by that of the authority by the governed, meaning you and I, we hold all the true power. We grant the authority to the government to do things. Now, government has done all kinds of stuff without my okay or yours or Pat's or Dave Champion's or anybody else's. Because what they end up doing is they decide, well, since it's a representative government and we're all sitting here representing people, we're going to go ahead and grant ourselves more authority in our job capacity. I know a local elected official who, when he was sworn in and then went into the governmental indoctrination seminar, which lasted an hour or two, at the very end, the guy that was putting this little seminar on said, you're now no longer one of them. You're now part of us, part of government. And that's the way this indoctrination finished. You got to be kidding me. It's of the people, by the people, for the people. That was the idea. Now, that was lost long ago. You also have to remember that one of our founders, and Pat, correct me if I'm wrong, it was Thomas Jefferson, I believe, who had the quote about replenishing, refertilizing the tree of liberty with the blood of patriots and tyrants, and went on to say that nary should it go 20 years without some form of revolution, even if it's small, to make sure that we keep the people who are in government in check, because 20 years is roughly a generation. And if a generation begins to forget that the people truly have the power, and they grant, they vest some authority to the government to do a few things on our behalf, namely to protect our liberty and our freedoms, and to also protect the borders of the country. Those are the primary reasons for government. And then make sure that the states don't screw themselves and each other back and forth with trading between the states. That's really where it is. There's 17 enumerated authorities, 7 or 8 of which, if you read them, are well beyond what the founders had put on there, really not appropriate for this day and age in our society. It's about a dozen things. But the government gets involved in everything. All they do is pass new regulation to do it. And unfortunately, the Supreme Court has not come up often enough and said, that's not one of your authorities. Instead, they look at not so much the constitutionality of an applied law, but the application of the law. What if they looked at the original intent from the founders and decided from there, is this actually within the authority of the federal government? More often than not, they would say, absolutely not. We've recently had that with this whole debate over gay marriage. The government shouldn't be involved in marriage in the first place. So why is it at the Supreme Court, whether it's legal or illegal? Is it somebody's right against somebody's right? It should never be in the government's hands to begin with. And there's so many things, Pat, that are in the social mainstream that the government gets involved in that shouldn't be.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's the problem, basically, is the we elect people who don't understand the proper role of government. If they, you know, if we would just find people who understood the proper role of government, which is to protect our liberties and our borders, and in the state, you know, it needs to be a much more limited than what it is. I'm drawing a blank. See, unprepared.
Look at it like this: when the education system really started to change was when the Department of Education was elevated up and had a lot more concentration that came into it during the Kennedy administration.
Right.
So you literally have to find people who are enigmas, such as yourself or me or Dave Champion, mm-hmm. that have gone on our own to learn about these things right. that were commonplace up till mid-century of the 20th century. Now a lot of those folks, they're either a lot older, mm-hmm. they've changed with their way of thought because of the whole way that things have been going in the media, the news, the way that things are discussed. Right. You never hear about the Republic. You always hear about our democracy.
Right. Yeah,
constantly. Our democracy. It's not a democracy. Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution, we're guaranteed a Republican form of government constrained by this Constitution. It's
right. And that's Republic. That point is what I was going to get at when I spaced out was it, when we had the Constitution, which we still do in name only, but it didn't matter who you sent to Washington because there was only so much they could do because it was all limited by what, you know, by the Bill of Rights and by the enumerated powers of the Constitution. But as we, the people, start letting them get away with violations of the Constitution over time, it means nothing anymore. Now we have, you know, we have domestic armies and the BLM and other federal agencies. We have, you know, just all kinds of things where our rights are being slowly whittled away. You know, I heard a state pass that, yeah, the cops can enter your house without a search warrant now and stuff like that. Blatantly unconstitutional. But there's no one guarding the hen house. You know, the foxes are guarding the hen house and no one's holding anyone accountable.
Where does the ultimate responsibility, according to the founders, mm-hmm. end up in holding the government accountable?
Yeah.
A well-armed society.
Right, right.
And they're trying to take our guns now.
Yes.
So
yes.
What we're seeing, the writing on the wall is there's going to be this massive explosion at the Republican National Convention in July.
Yeah.
And things are going to fall apart, and the good old boys network who are running it, Reince Priebus and the boys, are going to throw somebody in there. And say it is a Scott Walker. Scott Walker would probably appeal to both the mainstream and the more conservative, but just that the process was exploded like this is going to drive millions of people away, mm-hmm. which then puts Hillary in.
Yes.
And when you're not showing up to vote for president, you're probably not going to show up to vote for your representative in the House of Representatives or your senator
yes.
if they're up.
Yes.
And that then hands the power back over to the Democrats, both in both houses of Congress and in the White House. And it's over.
Yeah.
And then from there, the only thing that people might get pissed enough, and then there might be an armed revolution. And even then, it might be spotty. I kind of doubt you'd see full-blown civil war in this country.
Yeah.
It'd probably be a couple of people here and there, no, you're not coming to my house, gun them down, then they blow up, whatever it is. It's going to be nuts.
Yeah. It's going to be nuts. Yeah. It's
because of the power brokers.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's not going to be pretty. A lot of the Republicans are kind of deluding themselves. They're looking at the voter turnout in the primaries between Hillary and Bernie Sanders and say 20 times more Republicans are showing up to the polls. We're going to stomp them in November. Now, I mean, that's kind of a lackluster choice. You're choosing between the monstrously corrupt Hillary Clinton and the socialist Bernie Sanders. There's not a lot of incentive for people to come out and vote. But their Democrats are going to show up in droves to vote against Donald Trump. That's, you know, one reason why I think the Republicans don't want him as the nominee. But it's going to be a mess. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens.
The money guys, keep in mind that Trump is classically one of the money guys that buys votes and power in elected office. And when his financial equals, if you will, can't get the same thing because he has enough money he won't get paid off, he'll do whatever he wants. And then you get Democrats who don't that support Hillary. They say they don't care anything at all about her. Some guy who was a Marine brought up something about Benghazi. He got booed and booed and booed.
Yeah, it reminded me of Ron Paul getting booed for the for talking about the Golden Rule, you know, in a crowd full of Christians.
Yeah,
it's like, wow, the party structure is so, you know, people are so ingrained in the party structure that's like, anything against the party, even though the party is against them, ultimately, they're saying, no, you got to be faithful to the party. But the party's long gone. No principles in it whatsoever.
Let's look at the Democrat Party, right? Democrat Party, which you get a vast majority of the black community votes Democrat. I mean, unbelievably so.
Oh, yeah.
And how much has that... Now, keep in mind that it was the Republicans that worked and pushed fought the 13th, 14th, and 15th
They're
Amendment
just taking, against... Yeah. The Democrats are just taking advantage of that whole situation.
They absolutely have, and they've redefined the Republicans. You know, the KKK was the enforcement arm of the Democrat Party in the South after the Republican Abe Lincoln got the country back together and said no more slavery in the South.
What?
But now, in sense, and you had blacks come a long way in 100 years, and then since the passage of the Civil Rights Acts, which were all Republican written and stopped by and watered down by the Democrats, but they took a lot of credit for it because they had the Senate under Johnson when he was majority leader, and then Johnson was president later when he signed some of these things, so was Kennedy, so they become the champions.
Yeah.
And I remember a quote by Johnson. He says, we'll have those niggers voting for us for the next 100 years if we pass this.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not the guy you want to vote for.
No, it's not.
And now you look at where the black community has gone since they all started getting on board for the most part of society. Right. They've gone nowhere. They're still in the same neighborhoods. They're getting older. They're getting worse. And there's no society.
Yeah.
And it's the idea of basically the Uncle Sam's plantation. Look, stay there. We're going to allow everybody to have unlimited minuscule welfare in free money. If you just come out and vote every other year for us, that's all we want.
Yeah, I ask Democrats who are supporting Hillary, I go, which of Hillary's stances or principles are you, which one is your favorite? They can't name one.
No.
They can't name one.
And the same thing with Bernie. What is socialism?
Yeah.
They can't define socialism.
Yeah. Oh, he's going after the big banks. But he wouldn't vote to audit the Fed.
No, not at all. Not even getting close to that. Yeah. So there's a lot of total hypocrisy when it comes to blind party loyalty. Mm-hmm. Blue dog Democrat. If there's a blue dog running and on a Democrat tick, we take it. Anyhow, we'll be right back for segment four right after this.
Welcome back to Totally Unprepared. I was prepared.
So this is now segment four, where we go through your viewer emails. You can always send this to us at DaveAndBillShow@gmail.com, not Pat and Bill Show.
Right, Dave and
Pat's
Bill.
Just here for the DaveAndBillShow@gmail.com. Also, catch up on our prior shows, everything that we've had. I'm actually about three episodes behind because yours truly has been very, very busy. But they'll get up there by the time we film the next show. I'll have them up. So totallyunprepared.info. You have the videos. You've got audio. It takes you to our YouTube channel if you want. We've also got a Facebook page. You can search us out there. Shoot us messages, emails, whatever you want. We'd love to hear from you. Where do you watch? Do you watch us on the website? Do you watch us on YouTube? Do you, you know, find our links on the Facebook page? Where do you watch a show? What do you think of it? Give us a little bit of feedback here. We'd like hearing about that. Do you watch us locally on the air broadcast on KPVM? So let us know. All right, Pat, Dave and I did not get to this last week, but it was timely last week. Now it's a little bit after, but There is a new video that came from the back seat
right.
of the truck that Lavoie Finicum was driving the right. night that he was gunned down and killed.
Yes.
On
from a woman's iPhone, I believe. I don't remember what her name was.
Well, it could have been iPhone. I don't know. It could have been a Samsung. Well, it could have been an LG.
From their phone.
From their smartphone.
Yeah.
But that was the night that he got shot on the highway, the snowbound highway. And it's interesting. We'll talk about the video in a moment, but where that police blockade happened was on a blind curve with no shoulder.
Right.
And the Supreme Court ruled several years ago that to put up a police blockade around a blind corner with no shoulder is considered use of deadly force because the driver of that is going to have one of three options. Go off to the right, go off to the left, or slam straight into him.
Right.
And if there's no shoulder, if it's a dangerous situation like this, there was a hill going down off the left, a hill going up, on the right, hill going up on the left, and then blockaded vehicles with a bunch of cops there in the front, basically forcing them into a situation where they would lose life or limb as the driver being stopped or the police. So it'll be interesting if this ever gets looked at. It seems like they don't, in Oregon, they don't really care. It seems a lot like it's a smaller version, in my opinion, of Waco, Texas.
Yes.
Where the government violated so many laws and violated so many rights and did so many things illegally, but they were never held accountable because it was the Justice Department who need to investigate themselves.
Yes.
The ones that are supposed to uphold, protect, and defend all of these rights and laws.
After investigating ourselves, we've determined that we've done nothing wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's the whole situation that caused the standoff in the first place or the protest in the first place is, you know, slowly but surely the BLM increases prices and stuff like that till it becomes apparent that they're just trying to drive these guys off their land, and the only person they can complain to is a federal judge who works for the same guys that's trying to run them off their land. So they take a stand, and that is what leads to the whole thing in the first place, is there's no good place to redress the grievances. And it was the same situation here. It's like, you know, there's a lot of debate. I mean, when a guy's saying, just shoot me, and he's, you know, get out of the car, there's going to be a temptation from these guys to just shoot him. But why did the roadblock happen in the first place? You know, they're on their way to have a discussion with a sheriff, you know, who is an officer of the law. You know, what harm were they doing anybody? So why did it happen even in the first place? Interesting to hear your thoughts on the video, you know, from someone who has some police and tactical experience on what occurred there.
Well, it's interesting on that video because you can actually now hear when the shots were being fired.
Mm-hmm.
And shots were being fired literally as the car was just rolling to a stop.
Right.
I mean, they're engaging now.
Yeah.
So is that an effect of the people in the vehicle doing something to cause the police to fear for life or imminent bodily injury, serious bodily injury? Or is this a case of, all right, we're under orders, we're taking these guys down whatever it takes, regardless of the lawfulness of these orders? And of course, you can't just say, hey, you know what, it's cool, go ahead and kill me, shoot me right here, like he said in the video. You can't offer that up to someone else.
Yeah.
You can't say, look, he said to go ahead and kill him, so I'm in the clear, right?
That by no means gave them permission to engage.
You know, Kevorkian proved that. You can't just do that.
Right. Yeah.
But in Oregon, they do have assisted suicide, so maybe they're using that law.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Maybe.
Yeah. So it's a tragedy, regardless.
It is. And then afterwards, you've got everybody laying down in the truck, and they're repeatedly hitting the windows of the truck with tear gas canisters to try to break them to go in there. Rather than getting on a loudspeaker, put your hands in the air, one at a time, slowly. I mean, there's so many ways to do it. These guys are behind cars.
Right.
They've got cover. They've got concealment.
Yeah.
They're in a tactical advantage to the people in this stuck truck.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to tear gas
them. Which is
them
two women, or one woman. Anyway.
I think it's two women and a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's one that was screaming so much you couldn't understand.
Right.
I couldn't understand. It was like somebody stringing up a cat and hitting it with a blowtorch. Not that I know what that sounds like.
Which is exactly what I'd sound like in that situation, probably.
So we end up with now seeing another format. And of course, the people who want to believe that the FBI, on behalf of the BLM and the federal government, were overreaching and killed Lavoie Finnegan outside of any lawful practice, they believed that when they first heard about it. They certainly believed that after the drone. They're believing it after the rear seat veto. But I got to tell you, although I don't like anything the way this happened, and I'm more on the side of liberty and patriots, it wasn't absolutely clear. Well, any of these videos don't make it absolutely clear, but right, I got to tell you, the more that comes out, the more damning it is against the federal government.
Yeah, I saw a thing, a chart the other day where the bullet hits were, you know, and three hits to the back. So, you know, you can argue, oh, I thought my other officers were in jeopardy or something like that. And again, I saw it on the internet, so it must be true. I think that it's just a tragedy that it happened in the first place.
Now, you actually have a personal experience where you were out shooting on public land, which is managed by the BLM.
Right.
And in the area that you were shooting, not the area where you were shooting, but in the vicinity, about a mile away, there is a no-shooting zone.
Correct.
Because there's some houses intermixed around these various in-and-out plots of BLM land. And you end up with a couple of these BLM rangers that stop literally downrange in the line of fire.
Yeah, they drove right in where the direction we were shooting. We were shooting against a berm, and they drove right in between us and the berm. And they got out, and they were very belligerent initially, you know.
And
the
first
thing they said, all tacked up. I'm going like, shouldn't these guys be out making a trail somewhere? But no.
Militarized BLM.
They're SWAT team going out in the desert to stop people from doing whatever, you know. And get out and says, do you know where you are? And I said, yes, I do. And I had a map with me, and I showed them how we were past the one-mile mark, and we were not in the California yet, so we were in an area that where shooting was allowed, and you know, it just, I could tell when they got out they were going to be very belligerent about it, and they changed the tune once they realized I knew my rights and I knew where I was, and I had studied the situation. But still, it's,
knowing your rights is important.
It is, because if we wouldn't have, they would have. Who knows what they would have done? You know.
Knowing your rights is incredibly important, and I got to tell you, just watching YouTube videos ain't going to get it done.
Yeah.
Somebody recently introduced me to the idea of, instead of signing a citation, you would like write some sort of a verbiage or code that basically meant that
Under duress or something like that.
I did some research on that, and I see where people get that. But the thing is you can't just research something until you find the answer that you're looking for and then call it good.
Right.
You've got to research it completely.
Yeah.
And I have found that is totally empty. I mean, that does not help you at all. And the person that told me about it says, I can't wait to be stopped by some cop and written a ticket because I'm just going to hand it right to
them.
Like
they think there's a magic bullet. But, you know, that's the problem with a police state. You can know your rights, you can have your rights and stuff like that. But if the guy with the gun and the taser doesn't care about them, then it's not going to matter.
I was a victim of that June 1st this last year when they arrested me on impersonating a police officer, and the DA came back, the chief DA, the chief investigative DA, chief deputy came in and said, not only is there not enough to warrant prosecution with proof beyond a reasonable doubt, we don't find there was enough reason to arrest based on probable cause.
Yeah.
So that lawsuit is coming, I got to tell you.
Right.
I am not going to tolerate that kind of... By the way, that same jackass deputy, who's supposed to be a reserve detective, pulled over somebody who I know and wrote them a citation for doing 45 and a 35 when the 35-mile-an-hour speed limit sign that's on that road and all the other roads in this town have never gone through the actual state certification to justify that.
So it's all 45.
So it defaults by law to 45. Right. But they're still writing them. And the DA is going in there and saying, well, we're going off this statute that says the posted speed limit. Well, fruits of the poisonous tree, that was posted illegally. Right. And nobody's fighting that. So I'm actually thinking about writing a generic motion to dismiss and publishing it online. So anybody in this county who gets cited for within this area, could actually download it, insert their information, and file a motion to dismiss,
right,
and get those things overturned constantly.
Yeah, and it's sad when law enforcement becomes revenue enhancement.
Yes.
You know, it's like there's no one is in any danger. You know, the roads are clear and stuff like that. Why do you enforce this stuff? It is strictly revenue enhancement.
As a matter of fact, with our new sheriff, she put two motorcycle cops out on the road.
Right.
Always on the main highway. Yeah. Doing nothing but writing tickets,
enhancing revenue. Revenue enhancement.
So, you know, and I've never liked the term law enforcement. I've always preferred peace officer or policing.
Yeah.
We've gone through the differences all the time. You know, law enforcement, there's laws on the book. We're going to enforce them unless it's against ourselves. Again, we've investigated ourselves and found out that there's no problem here.
Right.
So it is a bit ridiculous.
Yeah. There should be justice officers. Just pursue justice. And, you know, if someone's reckless driving and putting other lives in danger, go for
it. Do something about it.
But if not, then don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But the revenue enhancement is crazy.
It's ridiculous. All right, folks, thanks for sticking around. Send us your emails, and we'll be back here with Dave Champion next week. Have a good time.
Had fun. Thanks.